So Claire took a box from the storeroom, and she and Bay gathered the apples the tree had thrown at the back door.
"Why did it do this?"
Bay asked, as they walked to the garden gate in the bright, wavy morning light. "That tree has a hard time minding its own business," Claire said as she unlocked the gate. "We were all together last night, and it wanted to be a part of it. The tree fluffed itself up when they entered the garden."
"It must be kind of lonely."
Claire shook her head and went to the shed for a shovel. "It's cranky and selfish, Bay. Don't forget that. It wants to tell people things they shouldn't know." She dug a hole by the fence while Bay stood under the tree and laughed as it shed little green leaves all around her.
"Look, Claire, it's raining!"
Claire had never seen the tree so affectionate. Bay was just innocent enough to be able to overlook the paw it cast. "It's a good thing you don't like apples."
"I hate them," Bay said, "but I like the tree."
As soon as Claire finished, she and Bay went back to the house. "So," Claire said, as casually as possible as they walked, "does Tyler have a night class tonight like last night?"
"No. Monday and Wednesday are his night classes. Why?"
"Just wondering. You know what we're going to do today? We're going to go through some old photos," Claire said enthusiastically. "I want to show you what your great-grandmother looked like. She was a wonderful lady."
"Do you have any photos of your and Mommy's mother?"
"No, I'm afraid not." Claire thought about what Sydney had said some time ago, about leaving the photos of their mother behind. Did she leave them in Seattle? She had seemed so panicked at the time when she remembered that she had left them. Claire made a mental note to ask Sydney about it. Was a dress too much? Claire looked at herself in her bedroom mirror. Did it look like she was trying too hard? She'd never tried at all before, so she had no idea. The white dress she was wearing was the same dress she'd worn the night she met Tyler, the one Evenell said made her look like Sophia Loren. She put a hand to her bare neck. Her hair had been longer then. Was this stupid? She was 34 years old. It wasn't as if she was 16, but she certainly felt that way, probably for the first time in her life. As she walked down the stairs that evening, her shoes made unnaturally loud clicks on the hardwood. She had almost reached the bottom when she stopped. She heard voices. Sydney and Bay were in the sitting room. She was going to have to walk past them. Okay, so what? This was a perfectly normal thing to do. She straightened her shoulders and walked down the remaining steps. Sydney and Bay were painting their toenails. Claire was so nervous, she didn't even tell them to be careful not to get polish on the furniture or the floor. When they didn't look up, Claire cleared her throat. "I'm going over to Tyler's," she said from the archway. "I may be a while." "Okay," Sydney said, still not looking up from Bay's toes. "Do I look okay?" "Yes, you always..." Sydney finally looked up and saw what Claire was wearing. The way her hair was styled, the makeup on her face, the fact that she didn't have a dish in her hands. "Oh," she said, smiling. "Keep your feet out, Bay. I'll be right back." Sydney duck-walked with her wet toenails into the foyer. "This is certainly a surprise."
"What do I do?" Claire asked.
Sydney finger-combed Claire's hair and tucked some strands behind one ear. "It's been a long time since I've seduced a man, honestly. Come to think of it, I don't think I've ever seduced a man, honestly." "Huh. But we're talking about Tyler here. The man who has turned my bedroom walls purple from all his midnight romps around his yard thinking of you. It won't be hard to do. He's already there. He's just waiting for you." "I don't know how to do temporary." "Then don't. Believe it's permanent. Either it will be or it won't." Claire sucked in a small, deep breath, like just before a shot at the doctor's office. "That will hurt. Love always hurts." "That's one thing I know you know," Sydney said. "But it's worth it. That's what you don't know.
Yet.
Okay, Claire said. Here I go. Sydney opened the front door, but Claire just stood there, looking out into the darkening evening.
Well, Sydney said when Claire didn't move, I suggest you walk, since floating isn't working.
1 foot in front of the other, Claire walked out the door and down the steps. She rarely wore heels, but she did that night, sandals with long, thin heels, so she had to go to the sidewalk instead of walking across the yards. When she reached his front door, she was cheered by the warm light and the soft music undulating from his open windows. He was listening to something lyrical, classical. She could imagine him relaxing, maybe with a glass of wine. What if he didn't have wine? She should have brought wine. She looked over at her house. If she went back there, she wouldn't have the courage to come back. She straightened her dress and knocked on the door. He didn't answer. She frowned and turned to make sure she did see his Jeep parked on the street. She had her back to the door when she felt it open. It stirred the hem of her dress, and she turned back around.
Hi, Tyler.
He stood there, as if so shocked he couldn't move. If he was going to leave this all up to her, they were both in trouble. Break it down into steps, she told herself, like a recipe. Take one man and one woman, put them in a bowl. She really sucked at this.
Can I come in? She asked.
He hesitated and looked over his shoulder.
Well, sure, of course, he said, stepping back to let her enter.
She walked past him, almost touching him, letting him feel the static. This was obviously the last thing he expected, because the first thing he asked was, what's wrong?
Nothing's wrong, she said.
Then she saw her. There was a woman, a petite redhead, sitting cross-legged on the floor, 2 bottles of beer on the coffee table next to her. She either meant something to Tyler or clearly wanted to. Her shoes were off and nowhere to be seen, and she was leaning forward so that the flowy V-neck of her shirt fell away from her chest slightly. She was wearing a peach-colored bra. It seemed Tyler had 2 females ready to seduce him that night.
How could she be so stupid?
Did she really think he was just sitting there waiting on her?
Oh, you have company.
She started backing away and backed right into him. She whirled around. I didn't know. I'm so sorry.
There's nothing to be sorry about. Rachel is an old friend, passing through on her way to Boston from Florida. She's staying with me a few days.
Rachel, this is Claire, my next-door neighbor. She's a caterer, specializing in edible flowers. She's incredible.
Tyler took Claire by the arm and tried to lead her farther into the living room. After a couple of seconds, he had to pull his hand away quickly, flipping it back and forth as if burned.
He met her eyes with a dawning understanding.
I'm sorry. I really have to go. I didn't mean to bother you.
You weren't, Tyler said, but she was already out the door.
Claire? Sydney called.
She was halfway up the staircase before Sydney made it out of the sitting room.
Claire?
She stopped and turned.
Rachel!
Sydney looked up at her, confused.
What?
He was with Rachel, Claire said.
They have history. They have a bond. She's staying with him. She was looking me over like competition. I've seen it before. Women do it to you all the time.
Sydney looked flabbergasted and indignant, which, when Claire thought about it later after she had calmed down, was nice. Her sister was mad on her behalf.
He had another woman over there?
Claire thought of those photographs of her grandmother with a series of smitten boys.
I don't need a photo of a man looking at me as if he loves me. I'm fine, aren't I fine?
You really want me to answer that right now? Claire put her hand to her forehead.
She was still so hot. This was unbearable. I don't know how to do this.
Maybe I'll just go out to the garden, and every once in a while he can come by, and we won't talk about it afterward, but the apple tree will thank him, like last time. You've lost me. Claire let her hand fall to her side. I feel like a fool. That, dear sister, is step one.
Do you think you could write it down? I have the recipe all wrong, she said, and turned to walk up the steps.
I'm going to take a bath.
You just took one this afternoon.
I smell like desperation.
Sydney chuckled.
You'll be fine.
Claire changed out of her dress and put on her old seersucker robe. She was looking for her slippers when her bedroom door opened. She could only stare, dumbfounded, as Tyler entered and ominously closed the door behind him. She grabbed the lapels of her robe, which was ridiculous, considering what she'd just gone over to his house to do.
Why did you change out of that dress?
I love that dress. But I like the robe, too. His eyes slid down her body.
Why did you come to see me tonight, Claire?
Please forget it.
He shook his head. I'm through forgetting. I remember everything about you. I can't help it.
They stared at each other. Take one man and one foolish woman and put them in a bowl.
This wasn't going to work.
You're thinking too much again, Tyler said. So this is your bedroom. I've wondered which one was yours. I should have guessed it was the turret room.
He walked around, and she had to force herself to stay where she was, not to run to him and take the photo he'd lifted from the bureau, not to tell him to leave the books stacked by the window seat alone, that she had a particular order to them. She'd been about to share her body with this man, and she couldn't even share her room?
Maybe with some preparation. Time to shove her shoes under the bed, to take the stained coffee cup off the nightstand.
Isn't Rachel waiting for you? She asked anxiously when he peered into her open closet.
He turned to face her. She was across the room, in the corner where she'd last kicked her slippers.
Rachel is just a friend.
You have history.
We used to be a couple when I first moved to Florida to teach. It lasted about a year. We didn't work out as lovers, but we remained friends.
How is that possible? After all you've been through.
I don't know. It just is.
He walked toward her. She could have sworn chairs and rugs moved out of his way to make his path easier.
Did you want to talk? Did you want to ask me to dinner? Or a movie?
She was literally backed into a corner. He came up close to her, doing that not quite touching thing he was so good at. Like she was able to feel him without actually feeling him, like she was imagining him somehow.
If I have to say it, I will die, she whispered, right here. I'll fall to the floor, dead from embarrassment.
The garden.
She nodded.
His hands went to her shoulders, and his fingers snaked in under the collar.
Not so easy to forget. Is it?
No.
The robe slid off her shoulders and would have fallen off completely had she not still had a hold of the lapels.
Your skin is hot, he whispered. You could have blown me over with a whistle when I felt how hot you were at my house.
He kissed her and pulled her away from the corner. He then backed her toward her bed, devouring her.
Take one man. One foolish woman, put them in a bowl and stir.
Her head was spinning, her thoughts dizzy. She felt like she was falling. Then she actually was. The back of her knees hit the bed and she fell back. Her robe opened and Tyler was there, breaking the kiss only long enough to take off his shirt so that their bare chests touched.
He knew.
He remembered how she needed that kind of body-to-body touch, how she needed someone to absorb what she had too much of.
"We can't do this here," she whispered, "not with Sydney and Bay downstairs."
He kissed her hard. "Give me 10 minutes to get rid of Rachel."
"You can't get rid of Rachel."
But she's going to be here 3 days. They stared at each other. And he finally took a deep breath and rolled beside her. She was going to close her robe, because how could she just lie there with her robe open? But he stopped her by sliding his hand over her chest and cupping one of her breasts. It felt so secure, so right. Mine. Expectation can be nice, too, I guess, he said. 3 whole days of expectation. 3 whole days, she repeated. What changed your mind? He said, moving to his side and dipping his head, putting his mouth where his hand had been. She grabbed his hair in one hand and squeezed her eyes shut. How could she want something this much, something she didn't even understand? I should let people in. If they leave, they leave. If I break, I break. It happens to everyone, right? He lifted his head to look in her eyes. You think I'm going to leave? There can't be this forever. Why do you think that? No one I know has ever had this forever. I think of the future all the time. All my life I've chased dreams of what could be. For the first time in my life, I've actually caught one. He kissed her again before grabbing his shirt and standing. I'll give you 1 day at a time, Claire. But remember, I'm thousands of days ahead already. It was Fred's first night in the attic, and Evenel could hear him moving around upstairs. It was nice, knowing someone was around, making small, busy noises like mice. The thing about ghosts was that they didn't make a sound, and she'd been living with the silent ghost of her husband for long enough to know. She wondered if she was being hypocritical, encouraging Fred to move on. It wasn't as if Evenel had moved on, really. Maybe it was different when the one you loved died, as opposed to the one you loved simply leaving you. Or maybe it was the same thing. It probably felt like the same thing anyway. All of a sudden, Evenel sat up. Damn! She needed to give someone something. She thought about it a moment. It was Fred. She had to give Fred something. She turned on the light by her head and reached for her robe. She walked into the hall, then paused, figuring out where to go. The 2 other bedrooms downstairs were now neatly organized with filing cabinets and nice wooden storage shelves for all her things. Left. The 2nd bedroom. She flipped the switch, went to the filing cabinets, and opened the drawer marked G. In the drawer she found gloves, a geode, and grass seeds neatly categorized under their proper headings. Under the heading Gadget, there was a reference note Fred had put there that said, "See also tools." It was trouble he needn't have gone to. If she needed a tool, she went right to the tool. But Fred still hadn't gotten his mind around how exactly it worked. Well, hell, neither had she. Under Gadget, she found what she needed. It was a gizmo still in its store packaging, a kitchen instrument called a mango splitter, purportedly making cutting around the seed of a mango easier. She wondered how he was going to take this. He had initially moved in because he'd hoped she would give him something that would help him with James. Was he disappointed in her for not producing that hallowed thing? Now, after all this time, she was going to give him something, and it had nothing to do with James. Maybe it was for the best. Maybe he would take it as a sign that he was doing the right thing moving on. Or maybe he would think he just needed to eat more mangoes. She heard the soft chirp of Fred's cell phone upstairs. He had said he didn't want to use her phone, in case she needed to call someone to tell them that she was coming over with something they needed, which made her feel good, like he thought of her as a superhero. She knocked once on the door to the attic, then walked up the stairs. When she reached the top step, she saw Fred in his leather reading chair near the corner cupboard that housed his television. An antiques magazine was on the leather ottoman in front of him. The area still smelled like fresh paint. Right, right, he was saying into the phone. He saw her and waved her in. Do the best you can. Thanks for calling. He hung up.
Did I interrupt something?
No, it was just business. A delayed order. He put the phone down and stood. What brings you up here? Are you all right? Can't sleep? Do you want me to cook something for you?
No, I'm fine.
She held out the package.
I needed to give this to you.
Chapter 12. Sometimes Henry wished he could fly, because he couldn't run fast enough. A couple of nights a week, Henry would get out of his bed, quietly so he wouldn't wake his grandfather, and he would simply run. On the night he turned 21, he ran all the way to the base of the Appalachians, heading into Asheville. Being that age, suddenly, gave him a burst of energy, and he knew he had to do something with it or else he would explode. It took him 6 hours to get back home. His grandfather had been waiting on the porch for him that morning, and Henry told him that he'd been sleepwalking. He doubted his grandfather would understand. There were times when Henry couldn't wait to be old, like his grandfather. But there were times also that his body was alive and jumping with youth, and he didn't know what to do with it. He didn't tell Claire that day they all went to the reservoir that he'd never been there before either. He'd never done those things other kids his age had done. He was too busy with the dairy and dating older women who knew what they wanted. Being with Sidney made him feel young, but it also made him feel a little sick, like he'd eaten too much, and he could never run enough to make the feeling go away. Tonight he stopped by the edge of the field, his feet wet and his ankles scratched from the thorns of the wild roses that bloomed in the bramble next to the highway. The lights of a car came at him from the road, and he ducked into the grass as it passed, not wanting anyone to see that he was out there at 2 in the morning in only his boxer shorts. He didn't get up, even after the sound of the car disappeared. He stared up at the moon, which looked like a giant hole in the sky, letting light through from the other side. He took deep breaths of the wet grass and warm roses, and the black pavement from the highway that was still so hot from the summer sun that it melted at the edges and smelled like fire. He imagined himself kissing Sidney, putting his hands in her hair. She always smelled mysteriously female, like the salon where she worked. He liked that smell. He always had. Women were amazing creatures. Amber, the receptionist where Sidney worked, was pretty and smelled the same way. She was interested in him, too. But Sidney always stopped just short of encouraging him to go out with her when he sometimes met Sidney at the white door. Sidney didn't feel passion for him, but maybe she did feel a little possessive of him. He wondered if there was any shame to hoping she would grow to love him. He could feel this lust enough for both of them. He stood and ran back toward the house, a faint purple light trailing behind him like the tail of a comet. From his bedroom window, Lester watched his grandson run. All Hopkins men were like that. Lester had been like that. It was a common misconception that being old meant you couldn't feel passion. They all felt passion. They all had run that same stretch of field. Long ago, when Lester first met his wife, he'd set trees on fire just by standing under them at night. He wished for Henry the same thing he had with his dear Alma. And running at night like you were on fire was the first part of getting there. Eventually, if Sidney was the one, Henry would stop running to nowhere and start running to her. Claire discovered that expectation was nice for some things. Christmas, waiting for bread to rise, long car trips to somewhere special. But it wasn't nice for others. Waiting for certain female guests to leave, for example. Every morning, just before dawn, Tyler would meet Claire in the garden. They would touch and kiss, and he would say such things to her, things that made her blush in the middle of the day when she thought of them again. But then, just before the horizon turned pink, he would leave and promise just 3 more days, just 2 more days, 1. Claire had Rachel and Tyler over for lunch the day before Rachel was to leave, under the guise of good manners, because it was a Southern tradition to do all sorts of things under the guise of good manners, but really because she wanted more time with Tyler, and the only way to get it was with Rachel. She set up a table on the front porch and served turkey salad and zucchini blossoms. She knew Tyler was immune to her dishes, but Rachel wouldn't be. And zucchini blossoms aided in understanding. Rachel needed to understand that Tyler was hers. It was as simple as that. Faye had taken her seat at the table, and Claire had just set out the bread when Tyler and Rachel walked up the steps. "This looks lovely," Rachel said. As she sat, she gave Claire a once-over. She was probably a perfectly nice person. Tyler liked her, and that said something. But it was clear that she wasn't entirely over Tyler. And her sudden presence in his life was curious. There was a long story to her. One Claire had absolutely no desire to learn. "I'm glad the two of you get to spend some time together before you leave tomorrow," Tyler said to Rachel. "You know, my schedule is flexible," Rachel said. And Claire nearly dropped the water pitcher she was holding. "Try the zucchini," she said. It turned out to be a disastrous meal. Passion and impatience and resentment clashing like 3 winds coming from different directions and meeting in the middle of the table. The butter melted. The bread toasted itself. Water glasses overturned.
"It's strange out here," Bay said from her seat, where she was trying to eat.
She picked up a handful of sweet potato chips and left for the garden, where she didn't think anything was strange at all about the tree. Strange, after all, depended on your personal definition.
"I guess we should go," Tyler finally said, and Rachel stood immediately.
"Thank you for lunch," Rachel said. What she didn't say was, "He's leaving with me and not staying with you." But Claire heard it anyway. When Sydney came home from work that evening, Claire was in the shower, the water on her hot skin causing such steam that the entire neighborhood was enveloped in the moist fog. Claire heard the bathroom door open and jumped when Sydney's hand appeared and shut off the water. Claire poked her head around the curtain.
"Why did you do that?"
"Because you can't see your hand in front of your face for an entire block. I walked into Harriet Jackson's house thinking it was ours."
"That's not true."
"It could be true." Claire blinked through the water dripping into her eyes. "I had Rachel and Tyler over for lunch," she admitted.
"Are you crazy?" Sydney said.
"Do you want her to leave, ever?"
"Of course I do."
"Then stop reminding her that Tyler wants you, not her."
"She's leaving in the morning."
"You hope." Sydney walked out of the bathroom, her hands out in front of her like she couldn't see. "Don't take another shower. She won't be able to see to leave." Claire couldn't sleep that night. In the early morning hours, she crept to Sydney's room and knelt at the window that overlooked Tyler's house. She stayed there until daybreak, when she saw Tyler walk with Rachel out to her car, carrying her luggage. He kissed her cheek, and Rachel drove away. Tyler stood there on the sidewalk, looking at the Waverly house. He'd been doing that all summer, watching the house, wanting in to her life. It was time to let him in. She was going to live, or she was going to die. Tyler was going to stay, or he was going to go. She had lived 34 years keeping everything inside, and now she was letting everything go, like butterflies released from a box. They didn't burst forth, glad to be free. They simply flew away. Softly, gradually, so she could watch them go. Good memories of her mother and grandmother were still there, butterflies that stayed, a little too old to go anywhere. That was okay. She would keep those.
She stood and started to walk out of Sydney's room, but she gave a start when Sydney said, "Has she finally left?"
"I thought you were asleep," Claire said.
"Has who left?"
"Rachel, you goof."
"Yes, she's gone."
"Are you going over there now?"
"Yes."
"Thank God! You kept me awake all night."
Claire smiled. "I'm sorry."
"No, you're not," Sydney said as she covered her head with a pillow. "Go be happy and let me sleep."
"Thank you, Sydney,"
Claire whispered. Sure, Sydney didn't hear her. What she didn't see was Sydney peek out from under the pillow with a smile. Still in her nightgown, Claire went downstairs and out the door. Tyler's eyes followed her across the yard. He met her halfway and twined his fingers with hers. They stared at each other, their conversation silent.
"Are you sure?"
"Yes."
"Do you want this?"
"More than anything."
Together, they walked to his house and made new memories. One in particular would be named Mariah Waverly Hughes and would be born 9 months later. Sydney and Henry walked around the green downtown one afternoon a few days later. Henry had met her after work for what was becoming an almost daily coffee date. Their walks lasted only about 20 minutes because she had to get home to Bay and he to his grandfather. But every day around 5 o'clock, she would start looking forward to seeing him, unconsciously watching the clock and looking toward the reception area for him to appear. As soon as he did, carrying 2 iced coffees from the coffee house, she would call out to him, "Henry, you're a lifesaver!" It was common knowledge that single men in beauty shops were descended upon like carrion, and all the girls she worked with liked Henry and flirted and teased him while he waited for her. But when Sydney told her co-workers that she and Henry were just friends, they all looked disappointed in her, like they knew something she didn't. "So, can you and your grandfather come to Claire's dinner party?" Sydney asked as they walked. Inviting people over was something Claire had never done before. Like their grandmother in her later years, she never liked having guests. But Claire had Tyler now, and love made her different, less like their grandmother and more like herself. "I put it in my calendar. We'll be there," Henry said. "I think it's nice how you and Claire have been getting along. You both have changed a lot. Do you remember the Halloween dance our junior year of high school?" She thought a moment. "Oh, my God," she groaned, sitting on the rock bench around the fountain. "I'd forgotten about that." That was the year Sydney dressed up as Claire for Halloween. She thought it was hilarious at the time. She'd bought a cheap black wig and pulled it back with combs, and she wore jeans covered in dirt and Claire's old gardening clogs. Claire had become famous for unknowingly going out with flour on her face, and sometimes girls at the grocery store would make fun of her, so Sydney put streaks of flour on her face. The pièce de résistance was the Kiss the Cook apron she wore to the dance, which everyone had a good laugh over, because the whole town knew that no one would kiss oddball Claire, who was only in her early 20s at the time, but already ridiculously set in her ways. "I think you did it back then to make fun of her," Henry said, sitting beside her. "These days, I see you dressing like her, but I think you're trying to be like her in earnest this time." Sydney looked down at Claire's sleeveless shirt she was wearing. "True. And it helped that I didn't bring a lot of clothes with me when I moved back." "You left in a hurry?"
"Yes,"
she said, not explaining any further. She liked the way things were, the relationship they had, like when they were kids. David was nowhere in that picture. David didn't even exist when they were together, and there was no pressure for anything beyond their friendship, which was a huge relief. "So you were at that dance?" He nodded and had some of his drink. "I went with Sheila Baumgarten. She was a year ahead of us in school." "Did you date a lot? I don't remember seeing you at any of the date spots." He shrugged.
Sometimes. My senior year and a year after that, I dated a girl from Western Carolina University.
A co-ed? Hmm.
She nudged him with her elbow playfully. You like older women, I take it. My grandfather is a huge believer in the fact that Hopkins men always marry older women. I do it to make him happy, but there's probably some truth to it, too.
Sidney laughed. So that's why your grandfather asked me how old I was when we went to your place for ice cream.
That was why, Henry said. He's always trying to set me up, but he insists they have to be older.
Sidney had been putting this off because she was so fond of her time with Henry, but she honestly thought she was doing him a favor by finally saying, You know, Amber, our receptionist, is almost 40. She likes you. Let me set you up with her.
Henry looked down at the drink in his hands, but didn't respond.
She hoped she didn't embarrass him. She'd never thought of him as shy. With his head tilted down and the sun shining on him, Sidney could see his scalp through his closely cut hair. His skin was getting pink from the sun. She reached up and rubbed his head affectionately, like he was a little boy. That's how she saw him. That friendly, dignified little boy she once knew. Her first friend ever.
You should wear a ball cap. Your head is going to burn.
He turned his head and gave her the strangest look, almost sad.
Do you remember your first love?
Oh, yes. Hunter John Madison. He was the first boy to ever ask me out, Sidney said ruefully. Who was yours?
You.
Sidney laughed, thinking he was joking. Me?
The first day of sixth grade, it hit me like a rock. I couldn't talk to you after that. I'll always regret it.
When I saw you on the 4th of July and it happened again, I was determined that this time it wouldn't stop us from being friends.
Sidney couldn't quite get her mind around it.
What are you saying, Henry?
I'm saying I don't want to be set up with your friend Amber.
The dynamic changed in a flash. She was no longer sitting beside young Henry. She was sitting beside the man in love with her.
Emma walked into the living room that afternoon after unsuccessfully trying to make herself feel better by shopping. She had bumped into Evenell Franklin downtown, and Evenell said she'd been looking for Emma all day because she needed to give her 2 quarters. And, as proof of how bad her day was, taking money from a crazy old woman had actually been the bright spot.
This is the end of disc number 6. Please insert disc number 7. This is disc number 7.
Emma walked into the living room that afternoon after unsuccessfully trying to make herself feel better by shopping. She had bumped into Evenell Franklin downtown, and Evenell said she'd been looking for Emma all day because she needed to give her 2 quarters. And, as proof of how bad her day was, taking money from a crazy old woman had actually been the bright spot. Her big mistake had been in meeting her mother for lunch to show her what she'd bought. Her mother scolded Emma for not buying enough lingerie and immediately sent her off to get something sexy for Hunter John. Not that it would work. She and Hunter John hadn't had sex in more than a week. She dropped the bag suddenly when she saw Hunter John sitting on the couch, flipping through a large book on the coffee table. He'd taken off the jacket and tie he'd worn to work that morning, and his shirt sleeves were rolled up.
"Why, Hunter John," she said, smiling brightly, but at the same time an uneasiness settled in the pit of her stomach. "What are you doing here at this time of day?"
"I took the afternoon off. I was waiting for you."
"Where are the boys?" she asked, hoping to take this to the bedroom.
She glanced down, ready to grab the pink bag, the one that contained the sheer black bra and the thong with the tiny red bows.
The nanny took them to the movies, then out to eat. I thought we needed to talk.
Oh,
she said, fisting her hands at her sides anxiously. Talk. Discuss. Dissolve. No. She pointed at the book in front of him to distract him. What are you looking at?
Our senior high yearbook, he said, and her heart sank.
What could have been? She had his office at home decorated with his old football photos and trophies. She even had his old jersey framed. It was a time he could be proud of, when anything was possible. A time she took away from him. The bags and packages left on the floor, she walked to the couch and sat beside him, gently, cautiously, afraid that if she moved too fast he would bolt. The yearbook was turned to a two-page layout of candid photos. Sydney and Emma and Hunter John were in nearly all of them. There they were in the dome, the covered picnic area outside the cafeteria, where they would sometimes sneak puffs of cigarettes. There they were on the senior bench in the rotunda, an exclusive seating area claimed by the most popular in school, hamming it up in front of the camera at their lockers, celebrating at the homecoming game that year when Hunter John threw the winning pass. I was in love with Sydney, Hunter John said, and Emma felt strangely satisfied, or maybe justified. He was admitting it. He was admitting that she was the problem. But then he continued. As much as a teenager can feel love. It felt real to me at the time. I look at these photos, and in every single one of them, I'm staring at her. But then I see you, and in every single one, you're staring at her too. I forgot about her a long time ago, Emma. But you didn't forget, did you? Has Sydney been in this marriage for 10 years without my knowing it? Emma stared at the images, trying not to cry. She was ugly when she cried. Her nose swelled and her mascara ran like river water.
I don't know. I just know that I've always wondered, if you had to do it all over again, would you still do it? Would you still choose me?
Is that what this is all about? You've been trying so hard, the sex, the perfect house, because you thought I didn't want to be here?
I've tried so hard because I love you, she said desperately. But I took away your choices. I made you stay home instead of going off to college. You had children instead of spending a year in Europe. There's always been a part of me that thought I ruined everything for you because I hated Sydney so much, because I hated that you loved her and not me. I hated it so much I had to go and seduce you, and I ruined all your plans. I've been trying to make it up to you every day since.
My God, Emma, you didn't take away my choices. I chose you.
When you saw Sydney again, didn't you think about what could have been? Didn't you compare her to me? Didn't you think for just a moment what your life would have been like without me?
No, I didn't, he said, sounding honestly confused. I haven't spared her more than a moment's thought in 10 years, and barely that since she's been back. But you keep bringing her up. You think that her being back has changed things, but it hasn't changed anything for me.
Oh, she said, turning her face away to wipe under her eyes where tears were pooling, threatening to fall. He hooked a finger under her chin and made her look at him.
I wouldn't change a thing, Emma. I have a great life with you. You are a joy and a wonder to me every single day. You make me laugh, you make me think, you make me hot. There are times when you confuse the hell out of me, but it's a pleasure to wake up to you in the mornings, to come home to you and the boys in the evening. I am the luckiest man in the world. I love you so much, more than I thought it was possible to love another human being.
Sydney, no, he said harshly, dropping his hand. No, don't start that again.
What have I ever done to make you think I regretted my choice? I've spent days trying to figure out how I could have prevented this from happening, but you know what I realized? This isn't between me and you. This is between you and Sydney. I also suspect this might be between you and your mother. I love you. I don't love Sydney. I want a life with you. I don't want a life with Sydney. We're not those people anymore. He closed the yearbook in front of him, closing the book on childhood dreams of football stardom and backpacking through France. At least I'm not that person anymore. She put her hands on his leg, high on his leg, because that was who she was and she couldn't help herself. I don't want to be that person, Hunter John. I really don't. His eyes searched her face. I think she's here to stay, Emma.
I think so, too.
I mean in town, he said. Not in our lives.
Oh.
He shook his head. Try, Emma. That's all I'm asking. Chapter 13. Fred sat at his desk in his office, staring at the mango splitter in front of him. What did it mean? James liked mangoes. This could mean that Fred was supposed to call him and invite him to eat fruit? Why couldn't this have been clearer? Why couldn't it have come earlier? What in the hell was he going to do with a mango splitter? How was it supposed to help him get James back? He'd been agonizing over this for days now, waiting for some sort of sign, some sort of instruction. There was a knock at the door, and Shelley, his assistant manager, poked her head in.
Fred, there's someone out here who wants to speak to you.
I'll be right out. Fred grabbed his jacket from the back of his chair and put it on. When he went out, he saw Shelley talking to a man standing by the wine racks. She pointed to Fred, then walked away. The man was Steve Marcus, a culinary instructor from Orion College. They'd had some good talks over the years about food and recipes. It took a moment for Fred to make himself walk. The last thing James had said to him was that he should go out with Steve. This had nothing to do with that, he told himself, but he still found himself hating every step he took. He didn't want to date Steve. Steve extended his hand. Fred, good to see you. Fred shook his hand. What can I do for you that doesn't involve marriage? I wanted to invite you to join a free community class I'm teaching, sponsored by the university, Steve said affably. He was a stout, good-natured man. He wore his chunky college ring on his right hand, and Fred had always liked that his nails were neat and shiny. It's going to be a fun course on making cooking easy with gadgets and shortcuts. You'd be a real asset to the class, with your knowledge of food and what's available locally. This was all too much. It was too soon. Fred felt like someone was trying to wake him up too early in the morning. I don't know. My schedule. It's tomorrow night. Are you busy? Tomorrow? Well, I'm asking everyone to bring any tricks they've learned and gadgets they use that most people wouldn't know about. No pressure, okay? Tomorrow night at 6, if you can come. He reached into his back pocket and brought out his wallet. Here's my card with my number if you have any questions. Fred took it. It was warm from his body. I'll think about it. Great. See you later. Fred walked back to his office and sat down hard in his chair. Bring any tricks and gadgets most people wouldn't know about. Like a mango splitter. He'd waited so long for Evenel to give him something. This was supposed to make everything right. Fred picked up the phone stubbornly. He would call James. He would make this the thing that brought them back together, no matter what. He dialed James's cell phone number. He began to worry after the 10th ring. Then he started saying to himself, after the 20th ring, I'll know this wasn't meant for him. Then the 30th. The 40th. The 50th. Bay watched the party preparations from under the tree. Everything seemed fine, so she couldn't figure out why she felt so anxious. Maybe because there were tiny vines of thorns starting to sprout along the edge of the garden, so small and well hidden that even Claire, who knew everything that happened in the garden, couldn't see them yet. Or maybe she had seen and had decided to ignore them. Claire was happy, after all, and being happy made you forget that there were bad things in the world. Bay wasn't quite happy enough to forget. Nothing was perfect yet. Still, Tyler had stopped roaming his yard at midnight and giving off those purple snaps that looked like pop rocks, and it had been more than a week since Bay or her mother had smelled Bay's father's cologne, and Sydney smiled more because of it. Sydney had even started to talk more about Henry, bringing him up in nearly every conversation they had. Bay should be pleased about all this. She was even registered for school now, and in 2 weeks she would start kindergarten. Maybe that's what was bothering her. She knew her mother had lied about Bay's name at registration. It was a bad start. Or maybe it was just the fact that Bay still couldn't figure out how to make the dream she'd had of this place real. Nothing worked. She couldn't find anything that made sparkles on her face, and her mom wouldn't let her take any more crystal from the house outside to experiment. There was no way to replicate the sound of paper flapping in the wind either. There hadn't even been any wind for days. Not until that afternoon, when, as soon as Sydney and Claire tried to spread the ivory tablecloth over the table in the garden, out of nowhere the wind suddenly kicked up. The tablecloth snapped out of the sisters' hands and floated across the garden like a child had draped it over his head and was running away with it. They laughed and chased it. Sydney and Claire were happy. They stirred rose petals into their oatmeal in the mornings, and they stood side by side at the sink as they did the dishes in the evenings, giggling and whispering. Maybe that was all that mattered. Bay shouldn't worry so much. Big